Such interesting and provocative beginnings. The comments I had prepared are perhaps more abstract and less practically useful than what you just heard. My area of interest really is around new technologies, and in particular these days I'm trying to sort out what I think the social implications of the internet, the social media forms that have started to take over internet-based communication. I'm also interested in questions of political economy and relations between workers and their employers. I've been interested in the political economy of the media for quite a while, and I'm tempted to reorganize my notes on the fly here, but I'm going to try not to do that. I will say, though, that what I'm talking about here has been very usefully named, I think, by Nicole as a structural individualism. I think it's a very important concept, and I think that the way that social media works tends to breed that, and that's perhaps now that I've heard Nicole's presentation, that's my thesis. That there are particular aspects of social media-based communication and the popularity of social media in our cultural economy that make structural individualism an even more serious problem than it, I think, was before. And this has a lot to do with the concept that Tanner named as the audience commodity, which is something that has been produced by the media for a long time, but social media produce it differently. The condition of precarity of labor is it's not new, and in fact I think it is more typical of capitalism than we are used to thinking about. I think that the secure job is actually the exception, and of course in recent decades we've seen labor markets transform themselves to organizations of work which are much more precarious under a general neoliberal shift in our economy, and this of course has affected the culture industry as much as anything else. All kinds of culture industries, not just writers, freelancers, newspaper writers, journalists, but all kinds of artists, anybody who's trying to do anything creative for a living. What this has entailed, and to be honest, like I started thinking about all of this while I was reading Nicole's book, where she makes a really excellent point, I think it's in chapter 5, about how freelance workers, writers, people trying to do this kind of work in our society are having more and more responsibilities actually downloaded onto them. Not only do they have precarious, insecure jobs where they have to chase contract after contract, but the work of promoting their own work is no longer done nearly as much by the employer. Since you're not a permanent employee, the employer's not out there trying to attract an audience to your work. This actually seemed to me to be a very good point, because I just finished this book of my own and I was kind of surprised how much work the publisher wanted me to do to go out there and find ways to promote this book. And yes, they'll put it in their catalog and they'll get it on Amazon's web page, but really if I want to sell copies, it's going to be up to me. And I know that's not new, I'm not naive, but the extent to which it happens, I was also expected to do the indexing of this book. It's like, okay, how do I know how to put an index together? That's not what I do for a living. I'm not a marketer. I don't do marketing for a living, but they want me to do those things as well. And I know that musicians are always doing this, right? Like, I like music. I like a lot of particular musicians, and I follow them on social media, and they're constantly promoting their own work. And it's like, okay, doesn't your record label have a marketing department? Well, yes, it does, but neoliberalism means cutting out all of the expenses that you can download onto working people. So not only is the job market more competitive, and the market for your labor is functioning differently in that you have to constantly compete to get work, but also you have to constantly work to promote yourself as well. And this is a form of disintermediation, right? There used to be these intermediaries who would promote artists and writers and so on and so forth, and newspapers would say, hey, read our newspaper because we've got these particular great columnists, and they probably still do some of that, but probably if you're working for Vice, you're expected to do that yourself. And I know if you work for BuzzFeed, you are pretty much obligated to keep your eyes on the big board where they list what the most popular stories on the website for BuzzFeed are for the last day or week or so, and if your stories aren't up there, you come under greater pressure from the employer to write different kinds of stories and do different kinds of work with social media to promote your own stories. This kind of work is a kind of disintermediation, the getting rid of the intermediaries, which is a term that I'm taking from the work of Donald Tapscott, who's I don't recommend you read, but he's got this concept of disintermediation as one of the benefits of the information society. It's being used by him in a slightly different way, but I think that this capacity of social media to allow workers to do their own self-promotion is really part of both things. This intermediation in a technological sense, but it's also in this sort of economic relationship between the worker and the employer, and the market for the product is being disintermediated. Imagine if people who made cars were responsible for getting their friends to buy them. Buy that specific kind of car. Nobody would think that would make any sense whatsoever. But hey, you write a news story or you know, record a song, you're responsible for getting people to download it. It's a significant shift. And it's a shift that comes about, let me be clear, it's not because social media exists that workers are now responsible for doing this. It's because social media exists that workers are able to do this, and thus employers take the advantage of this new technological means to say, hey, we're not going to bother doing that work. You got to do it for yourself. In other words, social media provide this perfect opportunity for people to engage in the self-promotion of their own capacities. And when we're talking about cultural labor, it works very, very well. Probably wouldn't work as well with cars, but with the products of cultural work, products that can be distributed through the internet from anywhere to anywhere, from one prosumer to another prosumer, to use the common buzzword, makes it very easy to do this on social media. The problem is that social media systems are not set up to allow users, they're not set up in order to ensure that users can do this. They are set up in a way that allows users to do this, but social media are by and large set up in order to earn profit through the sale of advertising. And there are all kinds of problems with that fact. For one thing, it produces all kinds of information about the individuals that people feel is a violation of privacy in many ways. The surveillance systems are extremely effective through this structure. But what it means is the fact that advertising is what pays the bills at Facebook and Twitter and most other social media systems. What that means is that the system is set up in order to maximize advertising revenue, and thus the rules under which people are engaging in that activity are rules set by the conditions of producing what is being produced, not perhaps the product of the cultural work. Those conditions are determined by the employer who hires you to do cultural work. But when you are engaging in self-promotion, promoting yourself, the rules of that production of your own popularity are determined by the systems who are accountable primarily to advertisers. This means that social media cannot avoid functioning as a global popularity contest. Every time you're posting anything on social media and you're wanting to attract attention to yourself, you are competing with the other 1.8 or 1.9 billion Facebook users, for instance. A global market has been constructed for what people call the branded self. Trying to draw attention to yourself, it's easy to do. It's easier to do with Facebook than without, but you're not the only one on Facebook doing this. This is where the analysis needs to incorporate the concept of the audience commodity, which for those who are not in the communication studies discipline, this might be an odd concept. But the idea here is that commercial media have always been in the business not of providing content to viewers or readers or listeners. They've been in the business of providing the audience to the advertiser. And this concept was first struck into existence by Dallas Smythe in the late 70s. First published in the late 70s. I'm not sure when he came up with the idea, but in the late 70s, and of course, the dominant medium of the time was television, and so his work mainly described the way this works for television, although arguably it has been working for newspapers for several hundred years. The idea is that what newspaper television stations, for instance, that broadcast. And in fact, when Bell Spice was writing, we were talking about over-the-air broadcast, where you're not paying a cable bill at all. You're just sitting in front of your TV. You've got an aerial receiver, and you receive broadcast signals, and you're not paying for it. Thus, you are not the customer. Who is the customer? The customer is the one who pays for it. The one who pays for it is the advertiser. The viewer is not the customer. The viewer is the product. In the case of television, arguably, the audience as a whole is the product that is being purchased by the advertiser. Or something like this, the audience's attention, the audience's consciousness, the audience's ability to do the interpretive work involved in watching TV, however you want to describe it. The audience commodity is the thing that's being bought that pays for the cultural work that was being done in producing content, producing television shows. Radio worked exactly the same way, unless you had community radio or public media. Social media comes along, however. The production of the audience commodity changes. The audience commodity is no longer a group of people who are sitting back and doing only the interpretive work, constructing a meaningful understanding of the content. The audience commodity also is engaged in actively producing content that is used to attract other members of the audience commodity to the advertiser. It's a very complicated and very strange thing, and it's so strange we don't really have good simple language to describe it. But with social media, what's happening now is that the media systems are commodifying cultural labor power in a new way. What's being sold is your ability to make something meaningful. You watch a television show, you figure out what it is all about, but along the way you also figure out what the ads are all about, and then you are convinced to buy them. At least some of us are, or else the advertising doesn't work. And it does work. So we produce meaning out of this experience of our exposure to media. And we do this on Facebook as well. We also produce content, but we produce the meaning of other people's content. This makes the audience commodity something quite different, and we should probably come up with a new word for it, because when you're using Facebook to describe you as an audience doesn't really make sense. Users are not only producing content and producing meaning of other content, but they're also doing the work of distributing it. You are figuring out how to post things, which friends to connect with, which things to share with which people. All of that work is distribution of digital content that somebody has produced. Now, the production of the content with Facebook, with social media generally, differs from the production of content in television in another important way, and that is that the people who do that work are not paid in social media. They are in television. The people who make TV shows get paid to do so, and that's a good thing, and that's the more they get paid, the better the shows are, the more we like them, and the better they attract audiences, and the more money they attract from advertisers. Social media works very differently, and we're still trying to figure out exactly how all this works, but there is still a process of a cultural labor being performed. There is still some work that people do trying to figure it all out, and in fact, Facebook just gets more and more complicated all the time, and we end up doing more and more work to try to figure out how to keep on track of it and how to respond appropriately to everything we see. Used to be you either decided to like something or not, now you've got six different reactions that you can come up with. That doesn't sound like a lot of work, and you know, if you work in an auto factory, you probably think I'm crazy to say that that's work. But there are people who do this for a living, right? There are people who maintain the Facebook accounts of businesses for a living. It actually is work, because it is the work. Much of the work that has been done is the work of figuring out how to promote yourself, right? You can't just post whatever comes into your head if you want to promote yourself effectively on Facebook. If you want to be popular, if you want to succeed in this global popularity contest, you've got to figure out this work of promoting yourself. And that it's different from the work of producing content, but it's not entirely different, because you're using your interpretive capacities in a lot of ways. You're also using emotional labor capacities as well. But your capacity to do this cultural labor is really the thing that is being produced by the social media systems. And the social media systems exist and are structured so as to produce this particular commodity of our cultural labor power in the most profitable form possible. It's not just about producing the most cultural labor power, it's about producing the most effective cultural labor power. It's about convincing us and persuading us to think of our own activity as competing for attention in online spaces. You know, the other factor that social media comes along and makes possible, and I shouldn't just say social media here, but digital media in general, makes possible amateur production of content. And so one of the things that I think we would all recognize is that freelancers' jobs are made more difficult by the fact that they have to compete with all kinds of people who are willing and able or perhaps desperate enough to do the same work for free. And if you're competing with people who are doing the same work for free, the value, the monetary value of your labor is bound to be decreasing. So people are doing the same kinds of work. There are people who do Facebook work for free, and there's people who do Facebook work for pay. What is the value of that work that people are doing on Facebook for free? It's how can an employer decide? Well, some people are better at it than others and can probably increase their wages that way. But the fact that freelance workers or other workers in the cultural industry are so busy now having to promote themselves and compete for work all of the time really, I think, creates this new kind of individual that these are the sources, I think, of the structural individualism that really have to be recognized. We create this branded self who is constantly engaged in self-promotion. And that's a different kind of person. I don't really have any empirical evidence that this is becoming more common, but I think that this is inevitably the result of the way that social media are structured. It changes what it means for us to be successful as cultural workers. Used to be that, you know, if you wrote something really good and a few really smart people said, hey, this is a really good thing that you've written, you could say you were successful. Or if an employer said, yes, keep doing that. But employers don't say that anymore. They say, okay, that's good. If you do some more like that, we'll hire you again. That's a different thing to be said. That's a different way of judging the person. It's a different way of judging success of cultural labor. And you no longer need to just be good at what you do. You need to be good at what you do, and then you need to be good at convincing other people, promoting yourself. And this strikes me as something that, well, I don't like it very much. I think it undermines the value of the work that cultural workers do, and I think it creates a whole new competitive neoliberal arena, and I would suggest a whole new form of alienation in which cultural labor market works. Of course, people who work in the auto factory are alienated in ways that we don't probably need to describe too much. But when the commodity when the labor power from which we are alienated is not just our ability to put things together, do low-skilled manual labor, but is actually our capacities to engage in creative cultural work. To me, that's a deeper form of alienation. And it changes the meaning of what it is to be good at what you do when good at what you do, it gets conflated with being good at promoting yourself. You have to attach yourself to market relations much more deeply. In other words, this is a serious obstacle to class consciousness. And I think that this kind of individualism is much probably behind people's resistance to joining unions when they are in freelance work a great deal. I think it's actually a much broader problem as well. I think convincing anybody that there is a collective interest in joining any kind of progressive political project is actually not made easier by social media. The abstract idea of social media connecting people to other people, and you can share ideas about campaigns, etc., very nice, but when it's all backed by advertisers, when you're trying to get when the social media system is constantly trying to convince everybody to be more popular by sharing more things and posting more things that more friends will like, and seeing the value of what you do being determined by that number of likes that your post gets, which every single social media platform has, just by coincidence? No. It's not essential, but it's essential to the capitalist function of social media. That has really got to undermine any attempts to build solidarity between people when they see themselves as working for themselves by promoting themselves, right? And just to be not entirely negative to conclude, I think the implication of this is that what we need to do is help people understand how social media works and why social media is the way it is, rather than some other way that could actually help people build more solidarity and more consciousness of their shared interests with other working people. I'll stop there.
All right. Thank you.